This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The military tried something similar in 2019, and it lasted a very short time, and it was also quickly crushed. So I have a feeling we might see that happening. We might have other factions within the military who are going to quickly maybe restore order. Because even for the opposition, I know they would rather have Ali Bongo in power rather than having a military government in power.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, with his analysis regarding the coup in Gabon. Details coming up. Also, two men could become the first to face the death penalty under Uganda's new anti-homosexuality law. And United Nations officials say they are deeply concerned by the deterioration of human rights in northern Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In Gabon, military leaders today announced a mutiny just after election officials declared incumbent President Ali Bongo Ondimba winner of Saturday's election.
Il est porté à la connaissance de la communauté nationale et internationale.
A military spokesman says the national and international community are informed that Mr. Ali Bongo Ondimba is being kept under house arrest, surrounded by his family and doctors. He also said the military has cancelled the results of the elections in which Bongo was seeking a third term. Bongo and before him his father have controlled the government since 1967. A short time later, Bongo himself issued a video statement.
I'm Ali Bongo Ondimba, president of Gabon, and I'm to send a message to all the friends that we have all over the world to tell them to make noise. For the people here have arrested me and my family. My son is somewhere. My wife is in another place, and I'm at the residence. Right now, I'm at the residence, and nothing is happening. I don't know what's going on. So I'm calling you to make noise, really.
Meanwhile, there are reports of people celebrating the coup in the capital, Libreville, and cheering military vehicles passing on the road. But criticism is coming from outside the country. A short time ago, the African Union Commission chairperson, Moussa Faki Mahamat, said he strongly condemns the attempted coup. He called on the military to guarantee the safety of Bongo and his family and associates. So, as we just reported, just after Gabon's election authority declared President Ali Bongo Ondimba the winner for another term in office, a group of high-ranking military officers in the Central African nation announced they were putting an end to the Bongo regime and annulling the results of national elections. To brief us more on the matter, we have online the chief of VOA's French to Africa service, Timothy Donangmai. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Timothy.
Thank you, yes.
So, Timothy, did you see this coming? Were you surprised?
No, I wasn't surprised because there was a series of events of suspicious decisions made by the government in Gabon that made people in that country and even in Africa fear the worst, like the decision to impose a single ballot, where the candidates for presidents, for legislative positions, for local elections would be all on one ballot. And so that was controversial. And after that, there was a decision to ban foreign observers for the elections, decision to cut the internet in the country. So all that led people to believe that something fishy was being worked on. And the results of the elections were given late in the night without prior notice to the public, while the country was under curfew. And so the coup was really a logical step after all those decisions by the government.
So we just heard the president pleading for help. What is the fate of the president and the Bongo family now?
I believe they are detained in Libreville. The General Brice Oligui Nguema, who heads the Committee for the Transition and Restoration of Institutions that led the coup, told the French daily Le Monde that Mr. Bongo is in retirement and that he enjoys his all his rights as any Gabonese citizen, but that he was not entitled to a third term. So I think they are all in detention.
And Timothy, all the institutions of the Republic, according to the military in Gabon, are dissolved. The government, the Senate, the National Assembly, and the Constitutional Court. So what is to become of Bongo's main rival, Ondo Ossa?
Well, right now he is observing what is going on. The results of the elections haven't been cancelled. I don't think there's much he can do, but maybe hope for new elections where in which he can run.
Meaning he has to actually like wait for years or months before they even consider him as a candidate.
Right. And I believe there will be some kind of transition, as was the case in other countries, other African countries like Niger, like Burkina Faso, like Mali. So there will be a transition, maybe a couple of years, after which the military leaders will announce new elections.
And lastly, Timothy, France, the former colonial power in Gabon, has condemned the coup. So will it let this situation slide, or will there be a pushback from France to protect its vast interest in Gabon?
It would be tough. First of all, France condemned the coup, but people were quick to remind the French President Macron that when there was a coup in Chad in April of 2021, he was the first president to land in N'Djamena and promised to support the Putsch regime. So and that has put France really in a tight spot when it comes to condemning coups. But in the case of Gabon, as in the case of Niger, there isn't much France can do. But witness the collapse of her outdated African policy.
That was Chief of the VOA's French to Africa Service, Timothy Donangmai. Thank you for your input.
My pleasure.
Repeating a scene that has played out several times recently in other African countries, a group of high-ranking military officers in Gabon, as we reported, announced on television today that they were putting an end to the current regime and annulling the results of national elections. Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, predicts this coup will not have a long life. He tells me the military is taking advantage of the coup belt neighborhood and acting as if they are siding with the people and supporting the opposition. But Gitua points out the opposition would rather have Ali Bongo in power than have a military government running things.
I thought Ali Bongo had control over the military totally, so I did not expect this to happen. But very quickly from my analysis, I think this is just the Gabon military taking advantage of that coup belt, the being in that neighborhood where so many coups have been taking place, and the fact that Ali Bongo won the vote by 64% in trying to just protest and saying that the elections are not free and fair. However, I have a feeling this coup will be crushed very quickly because the military tried something similar in 2019 and it lasted a very short time and it was also quickly crushed. So I have a feeling we might see that happening. We might have other factions within the military who are going to quickly maybe restore order. Because even for the opposition, I know they would rather have Ali Bongo in power rather than having a military government in power.
But the military right now is actually pretending as if it is for the people. They're saying that the election did not meet the condition of a transparent, credible, and inclusive ballot, hoped for by the people of Gabon. So they're standing with the people.
Yes, you see, that is the guise right now, and the military is hoping that the Gabonese opposition is going to side with it and probably say yes, you've done the right thing. Restore civilian rule. But unfortunately, that is not going to... If nobody intervenes, it does not mean the military are doing it for the people. They are doing it from a selfish perspective. They are simply taking advantage of what other countries have done in the region.
So what will happen to Ondo Ossa, Bongo's main rival? Where does he stand in all this?
I think if he is clever, he should come out and denounce this coup. If he stands for democratic elections and peaceful democratic transfer of power, he should condemn this military takeover. He should condemn this coup. He should not celebrate thinking that the military are going to hand over to him. Normally, in such situations, they do not. So he is going to be actually, they will come and disband like they already did. They have already disbanded all civilian rule, judges and everything. So including they will suspend political parties. So even Ossa is going to suffer the same fate. So I think, in my view, he should oppose this. Actually, he should be seen on the side of supporting democracy, simply saying, no, if we are contesting this election, let us go to court, or let us take Ali Bongo to court and let a civilian judiciary decide whether there was any rigging or not, as opposed to allowing for a military coup. I have a feeling there are certain elements that are pro-Bongo within the military who are going to take over the government and return it back to Ali Bongo. I think the same factions that tried in 2019, this could be a repeat of the same. We might have other factions within the military who will try and overturn this and return the rule back to Ali Bongo, and then we see how it plays out from there.
And lastly, Professor, a spokesperson for the government of France, the former colonial power in Gabon, has condemned the coup.
Yes.
And China is actually closely following the developing situation, as well as Russia, which is deeply concerned.
Yes.
Will France in any way have any effect on the outcome? Like you said, maybe if this thing is reversed?
Yes, I have a feeling they will do that because Ali Bongo's father, Omar Bongo, and Ali Bongo have been French puppets in power in that country. There are a lot of French interests. The French take the oil, so they would not want, and they know exactly where this is heading. Just like Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, if you allow the military to take over, they are going to kick out French interests in the country. They are going to cut out all those oil contracts. So this time round, the international community, I know, will not want a situation whereby countries in Africa start falling through a domino effect to military coups and power. So I have a feeling this will be dealt with very swiftly.
That was Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke to me earlier today by phone from Nairobi. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerian President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, the current head of the regional bloc ECOWAS, says African democracies are under assault by anti-democratic forces within and outside the continent, but he added that he does not believe in military intervention. He called on U.S.-backed development finance and multilateral institutions, which were designed to support war-torn Europe after World War II, to swiftly adopt comprehensive reforms to meet the developmental requirements of young democracies in Africa. Martin Jay, a British foreign correspondent who lived in many African countries, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shadawi what is behind this call for the U.S. and multilateral institutions.
I think it's a cry for help, and it's almost a comical one because a more cynical journalist such as myself might assume that the State Department wrote that for him. I mean, you know, he's reaching out and hoping that organizations like NATO perhaps can get involved. I don't think there is a the international laws just aren't there for that. But certainly there's a desperate cry there for American intervention. And if you look at the history of American intervention on the continent, it's really a checkered one. It's hardly one that we can hold up, be proud of. But nonetheless, that's what he's calling for. And many people would argue that that is possibly a disastrous scenario to actually look for some sort of heavy-handed support. It was also hinting at international institutions, I think, like IMF and World Bank, because the suggestion, I suppose, is that if we, the West, lose Niger, and don't forget Niger is an ECOWAS member, that's probably quite a point to make. If we lose Niger to the East, to Russia, if you like, then presumably there'll be more money in the pot to go around in terms of soft loans from the World Bank, for example. So I think that was also, there were a couple of facets there. There were a few finer points in that request. It wasn't just on one level. It actually acted on several levels. But I'm not sure we can take it too seriously.
He told the U.S. Presidential Envoy and Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Ambassador Molyfi, that the ECOWAS consensus is that they would not allow anyone to insincerely buy time, but that he didn't believe in war. Does that mean the military intervention to restore democracy in Niger is just a pressure tool?
I think it always was a pressure tool, but we'll see in the next few weeks whether that really has any edge to it at all, because I think he's confused. And the reason why he's confused is because he's not getting clear signals from the Biden administration as to how this thing is going to play out. Biden is looking very much for a diplomatic solution, and you can hardly blame him, given the cost of the Ukraine intervention. I think the last thing now the Americans want running up to the re-election campaign of Joe Biden is some sort of international proxy war in the African continent between America and Russia. That's really not an option that can be tackled at the moment. So whether it's pressure or not, if you've got nothing behind it, then you can hardly call it pressure. I don't think ECOWAS, militarily speaking, is in a position really to talk about intervening. They've made a number of quite incendiary, quite explosive statements in the last week or so of saying we will intervene. We have a plan to intervene, you know. And I think that can't happen on the strength of ECOWAS on its own. It's very interesting to note that many people, many analysts who cover Africa think that ECOWAS is a largely Francophone sort of geopolitical institution. But in fact, it has more influence from Washington these days than ever before. And interestingly, the leader of ECOWAS is Nigerian. Obviously, that's an Anglophone country. So in terms of the pressure thing, I think we'll have to wait and see. But I think, as we say in English, strong words often come from a weak stomach.
That was Martin Jay, a British foreign correspondent who lived in many African countries, speaking to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. United Nations officials say they are deeply concerned by the deterioration of human rights in northern Ethiopia since the government declared a state of emergency August 4th in the Amhara region. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations Human Rights Office says conditions in Amhara have worsened since the government announced a state of emergency following clashes between the Ethiopian military and the regional Fano militia in July. UN officials report at least 183 people have been killed in Amhara since the fighting erupted and violations of people's civil and political rights have increased. Human rights spokesperson Marta Hurtado says the state of emergency has given the authorities broad powers to arrest suspects throughout the country without a court order, impose curfews, and ban public gatherings. She says more than 1,000 people have been arrested across Ethiopia under this new law.
Many of those detained were reported to be young people of Amhara ethnic origin, suspected of being Fano supporters. Since early August, mass house-to-house searches have been reportedly been taking place, and at least three Ethiopian journalists covering the situation in the Amhara region have been detained.
Hurtado says her office is calling on Ethiopian authorities to stop mass arrests, release those arbitrarily detained, and guarantee the rights of a fair trial for all detainees.
The federal forces reasserting their presence in certain towns and Fano militias reportedly retreating into rural areas. We call on all actors to stop killings, other violations, and abuses. Grievances must be addressed through dialogue and political process.
Hurtado says her office also has received allegations that at least 250 ethnic Tigrayans were detained in the disputed area of Western Tigray, reportedly in joint operations by the Amhara police, local authorities, and local militia. She says the Ethiopian National Defense Forces have given those detained the option of returning to Western Tigray or remaining in the Tigray Interim Regional Administration areas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Two Ugandan males have become the first people who may face the death penalty under Uganda's new anti-homosexuality law. VOA has the details.
According to prosecutors, Julius Yaruhinga in the Eastern District of Jinja performed a sexual act with a boy, age 12. Another man, 20-year-old Michael Opalot, allegedly performed an unlawful act of sexual intercourse with a 41-year-old male in the eastern city of Soroti. Justine Balaya, a lawyer from the group Human Rights Awareness and Promotion Forum, is defending Opalot. She says her client was reportedly seen engaging in a sexual act in a public space with a person who has a disability. Opalot now faces a possible death sentence if convicted under the anti-homosexuality law that took effect in June. Speaking to VOA, Balaya says the possibility of the death penalty complicates her defense.
Having the death penalty on the books, that changes significantly the protections that one is entitled to while they are waiting for trial, and it certainly makes pretrial remand a punishment in and of itself.
Because the case involves a capital offense, Opalot will probably have to wait between 3 and 4 years for his case to be heard. Blaya says several other cases involving alleged homosexuality are waiting to go to trial in Ugandan courts.
We also have a case of a lady who has been charged with promotion of homosexuality and homosexuality because of what they allege people were doing at a massage parlor that she owns. And of course, there's a host of other cases that are not in court, but where people have been charged formally with homosexuality, promotion of homosexuality, even child grooming in one case.
Frank Magisha, a lawyer and activist, says these cases are textbook examples of a witch hunt for lesbian, gay, and transgender people.
Those people have not identified themselves as LGBTQ, but the fact that there's an assumption that we're engaged in same-sex acts, and then they're saying one person is living with disability, which automatically the prosecution will have to prefer the death penalty under aggravated homosexuality. It's exactly as activists what we've been saying, that this law can be wrongly interpreted.
Uganda last hanged a convict in 1999, and in 2005 formally scrapped the death penalty. But the anti-homosexuality law reintroduced the death penalty for the offense of aggravated homosexuality, a move that gay rights activists have strongly criticized and are challenging in the courts. During the passing of the law, government authorities argued that they were protecting the moral values and principles of the Ugandan society against what they termed corrupt Western values. Meanwhile, journalists and media houses in Uganda say they fear heavy fines or the loss of their registration if they're somehow found guilty of promoting homosexuality, a term critics say has been vaguely explained in the law. This is VOA News, Washington.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Jumbe Hamza, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.